their works, their books, their articles are assigned reading in colleges and universities all over the country. And so in many, many ways, their scholarly views on important issues and surrounding the presidency have set the terms of debate. And these are some of the scholars whose works date back 40 years or so. And so there are familiar faces and voices on all the talk shows and all the op-eds in the major newspapers. So I think it's very exciting to have in one room such a collection of distinguished presidential scholars here at Boise State University.
From the time that George Washington took office to just a few weeks ago when the president took office for the second time, how has the U.S. presidency changed?
You know, that's an interesting question, Scott. Fundamentally, the office has changed dramatically. In fact, it's fair to say that the framers of the Constitution would not recognize the office that they created. They had created a much more limited presidency, but over the course of two centuries, as a result of several wars and economic crises, tremendous power has flowed to the executive. And so we witness now in our period a great concentration of authority in the presidency, which has, of course, triggered tremendous debate from coast to coast as scholars and statesmen and editorial writers and commentators have weighed in. They've expressed great concerns about this concentration of power in the executive. And of course, the reality is that actions taken by President Obama in his first term and now into the second term have also generated great controversy. His resort to the use of drones, his recess appointments, and any number of other positions and actions have contributed to this ongoing debate about the scope of presidential power and the proper role of the presidency.
You say that the presidency is not the one that the founding fathers envisioned. If they could come to 2013 and look at the current state of the presidency, would they be disappointed?
I would have to say they would, because that generation lived in great fear of a strong executive. After all, they had just rebelled against King George III in the Revolutionary War, and the last thing that they wanted to do would be to recreate an embryonic monarchy on American soil. They allocated only very limited powers to the president, and ironically enough, granted the great power to decide to go to war to Congress, not the president, because across the centuries they had seen how kings and despots and tyrants had often taken their people into war, not to serve the interest of the people or the nation necessarily, but to serve the personal or political or pecuniary interest of the chief executive.
Was there a turning point that you think empowered the presidency or led to other moves that thus empowered the presidency more than any other?
Yes, I think that we can identify the late 1940s, early Cold War period, as the turning point in American history, a point at which presidents began to claim broader and broader authority in the realm of national security and foreign affairs. And that was a result of the fear of communism, the intentions of the Soviet Union. And there arose in America a great concern that the president should not be handcuffed, that the president ought to be able to exercise sweeping discretionary power as a means of protecting the nation against the communist bogeyman. And once that position took root, not only within governmental institutions, but in newspapers across the country and in both political parties, it became very, very difficult for anybody to challenge the exercise of presidential authority.
As a constitutional scholar, do you see any harm in the presidency having so much power now?
I do. I'm concerned about the fact that it violates important Republican principles. It does violate constitutional provisions. It undercuts the very idea that we should be pursuing these most important policy decisions in the critical area of national security and foreign affairs in a way that reflects collective decision-making. Because after all, no one person has a market or a monopoly on wisdom. And we've never endorsed in America the idea that any individual is infallible.